Welcome everybody to Space Force episode 3. I'm Jason Tondra.
I'm Jim Seals.
And I'm not the Hulk, I'm Aid Smith.
It's easy to mistake you two. You look so much alike.
I know, it's terrible. It happens in supermarkets all the time. It's really bad.
Your secret aid is that you're always angry.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. We are here for The End is the Beginning, the latest episode of Star Trek Picard, which aired just a few days ago on Thursday. A very brief recap of the episode. And for those of you that have not seen it, we're going to spoil the hell out of it this hour. So we start off with a flashback where we find out that Picard sort of threatens Starfleet to either help the Romulans in their moment of need or else he would quit. And they said goodbye. They said you could quit. And we are also introduced to Raffi during this scene, who appears to be working at Starfleet in some kind of scientific capacity, I think, or maybe intelligence. I'm not sure. Anyway, you guys can help me out with that. But we, at the same time that Picard quits, Raffi is also fired, and she blames him for that. And then we go to the Romulan cube, where we meet Hugh, or I should say Hugh again after his appearances in the previous series, which we'll talk about. And Hugh appears to be the director of some kind of some part of the Borg reclamation project. I think he's in charge of the reclaimed Borg, the ones that have been rehabilitated. And he helps Soji meet this Romulan folklore expert, where we learn some of the mystery that apparently the Borg cube that they're in was cut off from the collective right after it assimilated a Romulan ship. And this Romulan folklore expert who has been reclaimed from the Borg apparently recognizes Soji and knows about her and her sister. Meanwhile, back on Earth, Picard gets attacked by a Romulan hit squad and gets defended by his housekeepers. And we meet Chris Rios, our pilot, and his crew of emergency medical holograms, emergency holograms, period, all played by the same actor but with different accents. And we also get Dr. Girardi. And finally, we are all off to Free Cloud, which is, we don't really know what it is.
It's the, it looks like a casino planet of some
sort. That's what I would say, yeah. Yeah. If we don't see some Ferengi, I'll be very disappointed.
All right, so there you go. Okay, so it ends. The episode ends with us finally hitting engage and going off to space.
About so thing time.
It only took us. It's only going to be the fourth episode before we're actually trekking the stars. So we'll touch on a lot of that stuff, kind of a little bit at a time. And there's a lot of Easter eggs and recurring characters to unpack here. But first, what did you all think? Jim?
Hi, Jim.
I liked it.
Okay.
My wife just did two thumbs down in the background. my favorite scene of the whole series happened in this episode. Okay. And that was the quick scene where Picard calls up Raffi and goes, "You're doing the research, right?" He knows her so well that he can't present a mystery to her and she won't look into it.
Yeah, right.
But then the carry on.
I really like that.
That felt very Picard to me.
You know, that was funny because it was kind of like Picard being kind of a dick.
But Picard is a dick. Like the first two seasons, like he doesn't really start mellowing out till season 3, maybe season 4. Like he has to be assimilated to start like loosening up.
Well, see, that's interesting because what I see is a contrast in the way that they're playing the character. Mm-hmm. He's a little bit more sharp-edged and ornery now that he's older, and I think they're ascribing that to his degenerative condition in his head.
Could be.
That when we see him in the flashback scene, he's very laid-back, mellow Picard, even when he's just been fired.
That's true.
Like, he's not mad. He's sad. He's disappointed. But he's not angry. But in the present, he kind of seems to get angry a bit more. But anyway,
So yeah, cool. It was good one. Again, we're progressing the story. They managed to switch between the characters enough that you kind of don't go, oh, we didn't see that guy today. What's going on over there? So they are doing, they're kind of keeping that on track. It was interesting, funny enough, as soon, like we said last week about the opening with the flashback, they did exactly the same this episode. Okay. I thought it would say, oh, here we go again. But they actually, it was kind of almost, again, it wasn't necessarily essential, but it was good to see again. It was not something like, because there wasn't anything, again, same as last time, nothing massively revealed, because we all knew that information anyway, but now we see it firsthand again.
Well, so, by doing it twice in a row, they're making it into a thing.
Yes.
Like, we're going to keep seeing this. I also found it interesting in contrast, you know, these days, a lot of shows, and the most current example is The Witcher, but this also happened famously in Westworld, is multiple time streams at the same time. Mm-mm. Right? But in those shows, they didn't tell you, and they made you guess, and they made you piece together the different time streams. But in Star Trek, they're much more user-friendly. They're like, okay, 14 years ago.
Well, that and they're using it at they're using the teasel to tease what's happened in the past.
Yes.
So I know I was the more critical of the three of us about using the teasel in the last episode, but now that they've made it a thing and they've codified it.
Yes.
Like, if we don't see that sequence where Bacall meets the young, you know, future Legolas Romulan in the teasel, like, and it's saying 14 years later, and that becomes the through line of the show, like, that's how the show is just constructed for season one.
Yeah.
I'll be disappointed at that point.
Yeah. Well, that, you know, kind of reminds me of Green Arrow, the Arrow series, which always had those flashbacks to the island.
Like, but they will like, randomize and scale throughout the episode Lost style. Like, this is, like, this is the teasel, here's the trailer, here's the main credits, here's the episode.
Interesting.
So if they keep it up and we'd start seeing, like, what the Romulan characters were doing at that point in time or whatever, then obviously it's going to be, you're going to film more jigsaw piece puzzles kind of situations in. So it's a good way of doing things. I mean, it kind of, rather than putting it right at the front of the episode and getting it over and done with and say, okay, that's your bit now, rather than kind of coming after like 30 minutes into it and go, well, was that in the past? Or was it? Oh, it's okay, it's 14 years ago, right? And kind of breaking that flow. So kind of just doing it that way is one way to kind of say, here's a little bit more information. That's Cameron with the rest of the story.
Yeah. Well, so.
But that uniforms. Sorry, just a matter.
Go ahead.
The uniforms are really nice. I quite like the 14 year ago uniforms. They were pretty cool.
The flashback uniforms that they're wearing like 14 years ago.
Yeah,
I like
they had the pips on his collar, like the classic uniforms, and then they had the kind of like the shoulders are different, so it's kind of like a bridge between the two different types. Well, I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I agree. I like those uniforms too. I would have liked.
And we could assume that the other character, which I've completely forgot her name again already because I'm terrible.
Raffi,
thank you. Is I assume she's engineering, so maybe it was like a big engineering project that she was trying to, or logistics or some sort, because Data was logistics, wasn't he, as well? So
it was operations.
She's definitely in operations somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's pretty cool. So, but yeah, it's all it ties together really nicely. They do a good job. So yeah, anyway, right, carry on.
Let's talk about that flashback scene, and let's talk about Picard's decision to threaten to quit and Starfleet saying, okay, you quit. That seemed like kind of a dumb gamble to me. Like, I mean, you don't threaten Starfleet, which is basically what he was doing, right? It was like, okay, do it my way or I'm leaving.
Well, Culp's done that, right? Culp threatened Starfleet to get the Enterprise in the motion picture.
Tell me, I don't remember this scene, so tell me.
Yeah, well, it's not even shown. It's literally, he goes to Admiral Nagoa before the movie starts and is like, hey, this Vigil thing's coming out here. I'm the only man for the job. And they just, they let him have the chair, even though he's not the right man for the job in the sense that he doesn't know anything about the new refitted Enterprise. He gets lost in the corridors. He winds up having a pissing contest with Deckel the entire movie. Like, Culp is the least effective person in that ship. If it wasn't for Spock and making sure that Spock was grounded, Culp has no role to play in that film.
I remember that one scene when they're in the wormhole and he tries to use the phasers and And Decker's like, no, don't use the phasers because the phasers are tied to the warp. No,
you have to use the torpedoes.
Torpedoes, exactly. Yeah. All right, so he tries to pull a Kirk maneuver and it doesn't work.
Yeah.
So the moral is Picard needs to be Picard and not Kirk. But it made me think that there's got to be something more fishy going on. That there is some Romulan influence in Starfleet that made Starfleet say no instead of yes.
Yeah, you can read it two ways. You can either read it like they obviously if it appears to be that the Romulans have set up the attack, like they were alluding to, like Rafi was saying about, okay, why would they blow up their own rescue mission?
Yeah.
Oh, there must be a reason. That would kind of make sense if they got influence in Starfleet to basically say, okay, we're definitely not having this. No matter who, whatever anyone says, it's not going ahead. That's one reason. I mean, there were obviously the idea, like in I've completely forgot Star Trek Insurrection. There you go. Thank you.
Yeah.
So Picard's already annoyed Starfleet in the past by doing stuff that he's not supposed to do.
Right.
And he's getting on. So, I mean, there is a possibility they might go, well, okay,
yeah,
off you go then.
Right.
Yeah, no one's indispensable. So there is a possibility, but there is obviously that overarching edge that there may be some hidden kind of plot that's also going on as well.
Yeah, it seemed to me like, okay, Starfleet's going to say, well, you're 65 and you're threatening us. It's not like you're indispensable.
Yeah.
So...
For me, so I rewatched the episode of Deck.
Good.
For me, the importance of that scene wasn't so much the exposition that they covered. It wasn't so much the nod to the place that created Fizbin and all the other little Easter eggs they scattered in that dialogue sequence.
Wait a minute.
Oh, yeah. Beta Antares is mentioned by name, and that's that's where Fizbin comes from. That's some deep cuts. Yes, there's a shipyard built, but the shipyard's only mentioned on like design plaques that we've never actually seen.
I see.
Like they'll just like set design things. Like it's super inside Trek baseball. but the moment is when Picard sits down and Raffi stands up and leaves, and he calls out Raffi, and she doesn't turn back.
Yeah.
And then the next scene with the two of them, he calls Raffi, she leaves. You know, while she's walking away, and he gets up, and then he follows her.
He goes after her, right?
But he's reaching, like he's acknowledging this is like it's a mirrored image of what he did previously, as opposed to like we as jaded viewers know that she's part of the main cast, and he needs to go get her. But in terms of like Bacall's emotional development, he's sort of trying to make amends for not getting up and walking after her when he should have at Starfleet Command.
When he says I'm sorry to her, that's an important moment, right?
Yeah, and there is also a possibility that because she mentions in about the Romulans as well, that if they know that there is a Romulan plot, they want to get rid of her as well, because obviously having her keeping Starfleet is another reason as well. If she's going to keep bringing Romulans up every 5 minutes, and we're involved in the Romulan plot, we want to get rid of her as well. So that may also be another good reason why she's thanked.
Yeah, it's kind of looking a little bit more like Hail Hydra here. Like
yes, it is.
The more we see, the more I'm starting to think that this Romulan infiltration of Starfleet is at least 14 years old.
But the odd thing... Go on, sorry, go on.
Finish your thought.
So the only thing I was going to say, there's also an odd mention it as well, where she's talking, and I swear this is the scene, but I can't remember if it's this bit now or when they're back on the planet, and she mentions about angels or something or other, and people are saying, is that a tie to the angel plot in Star Trek Discovery? Because that's all to do with time travel and this kind of stuff. And again, it's either like a nod to say angels, because angels is like, okay, that's weird. But the entire second season of Star Trek Discovery is like the red angel. It's like, eh, okay. So it's just such an odd thing, odd piece of language being used. That's all.
I don't even remember her using that term.
Yeah, she's just saying about hidden angels or something, rather.
Yeah, she doesn't make a comment like, this isn't me seeing. And then like gives like a little short list.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Angels is one in the list, yeah.
Yeah. So for me, I don't think this Romulan conspiracy plot is just a Romulan conspiracy plot.
Okay.
Because they keep saying how old the Jat Vash is. So I think it's a combination Romulan-Vulcan conspiracy plot. Because the schism between Romulans and Vulcans goes to the 4th century AD.
Yeah.
So that's only 2,100 years apart. And they keep saying it's this ancient order, this ancient cabal.
So you think the Vulcans are in on it?
I think the Vulcans have something to do with this. And I think that's why a Commodore O is involved in this plot thread.
She's not a Romulan agent. She's a Vulcan.
Yes, that's my guess. The other thing, like let's talk about the sunglasses.
Okay. Yeah,
the sunglasses was odd. Yes,
the sunglasses are super weird. Like they can either be
for those of you that don't remember or haven't watched the episode, Commodore Ohm shows up to question the scientist. What's her name? Jurati. Yeah. And she's wearing these sort of Men in Black sunglasses. And it prompted some Twitter outbursts like, oh, the crossover you never expected. But Jim has another theory.
Well, I don't want this to be true theory. Like, I'm not going to be happy if this is the revelation.
Yes.
But if this is just the poor man's lazy way of saying that she's from the Mirror Universe.
Because we've established that the Mirror Universe individuals have less tolerance to light.
Yes.
Oh, good point.
I don't want it to be that. Like, I don't want it to be that surface level. Like, I just want it to be.
Right.
I want something else.
Which would obviously be another discovery nod as well if it was Mirror Universe stuff.
Yeah.
Now, a bit too much of a nod, as I think Jim's
point. Yeah.
You're ripping off Discovery's plot line at this point.
I never liked the reveal. Like, yeah. It always just seemed a little cheesy.
Yeah.
And
never did get a chance to mess with their Mirror Universe counterparts, though. So, you know.
The Mirror Universe being afraid of the light is hilarious because it is an in-world explanation of the fact that all those scenes are shot with a darker palette.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah,
and that's
yeah.
only the DS9 scenes. Like, that doesn't include, like, the Enterprise. Like, the Enterprise is still shot with the same lighting. Like, yeah. For me, it was always kind of a little flimsy, especially considering how cool it made Wolka and Separate. Like, yeah. I thought, like, oh, we just mainlined it. Like, that was all tell for everything.
All right, so hopefully the Commodore is not a Vulcan from the Mirror Universe.
And we also know that Vulcans have an inner island. There was an episode in Enterprise where Archer hands her glasses, and T'Pol says, no, we develop an inner island because we live on a desert planet.
I'm glad you two are here to remind us.
Because I swear there's a situation where someone gets blinded and it kind of automatically reacts, and they think they're blind, and it turns to be that it's just that's kind of gone into effect.
Yeah, and yes, exactly. Like, Spock literally loses his eyesight in an episode, and he, like, for 20 minutes, he plays blind. And he's like, oh, yeah, I forgot I have this inner island. It's like you and your appendix.
All right, so what about Hugh? Hugh's back. Now, can someone... Jim, you want to introduce us to Hugh from his original appearances?
I believe he was, what, 3 of 5, right? That was his designation?
That sounds right, yes.
Yeah, he was 3 of 5. They found him on, there was a bone crash on a planetoid. They beamed him up because Crusher did it. The whole episode is constructed around Picard not being able to forgive. They come up with actually a doomsday weapon to destroy all the Borg, which is this pictograph that can't exist in real space and time, but that the Borg will keep trying to process it and then just shut down.
Oh, it's the I always tell a lie.
Yes.
Gag from the original series.
Yes, except it's now in pictograph form.
Yeah. But it's like that's so. That's I don't remember the name of the episode. I think it's Mud's. Is it Mud's Women or it's iMud?
iMud.
It's iMud, where Kirk goes to the robot in charge of all the androids and says, listen very carefully, everything I say is a lie. And when the droid tries to process it, well, then you must tell the truth, but everything you say is a lie. And it just goes back and forth and back and forth until literally smoke comes out of his ears.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was essentially the fun version of this gag.
Yeah.
Because it was just a singular robot named Norman. But, as opposed to like killing off a whole species.
But so anyway, they find Hugh in that episode and they unplug him from the collective.
He's essentially already unplugged from the collective,
okay.
But he winds up developing individuality.
Okay.
They give him a name. He encounters Guinan, and Guinan's people is destroyed by. Oh, my wife is pointing out that it's all due to his companionship with Geordi. Because he becomes friends with Geordi, and he's and he literally like Picard does the cutest thing, right? In the ready room,
right.
And he goes, "They'll all be assimilated," and he goes, "Even Geordi," and then he's like, "I will not allow that." And he's like, "What'd you say?" And he said, "I, So he like develops a personality because of his interactions. And then we don't see him. We don't see him until Descent. I think part one is when he's brought in, or part two, one of those, one of the two portals.
What season is that?
And that's where Lore has taken over a clan of Borg that have all developed individuality and they weren't able to function together. And then Data's brother's like, hey, I'm an awesome cult leader. I did this to the Packlands. I'll do it to you guys.
Right, right.
And in that episode, like, he was angry at Geordi because he's like, you made me this weapon and all these people are suffering. So he goes from being like this genteel robot who, you know, who has his eyes open, that like doe-eyed kind of person, to being this sort of resentful, like, yeah, you did that nice thing for me, but all these other people are suffering.
Okay.
And at the end of that episode, he then says, I'm gonna help these people try to individualize and try to work as a group, as a group of individuals, as opposed to being autonomous.
Yeah.
And that's sort of the false idea that we get, that the Borg are as much victims as Picard was. Like, we understand Picard as victim because we knew the man going into it.
Right.
And he was a special Borg because they gave him some individuality. They gave him the Lucidus persona. He was supposed to be a spokesperson. But now all the other drones are being seen as people who've had this horrible thing done to them. Right. They're not just zombies. Like, though, yes, I guess they're technically Borg zombies, but there's still a humanity within them.
And they could be potentially reclaimed.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes a moral and ethical test.
Yeah. And unfortunately, Picard fails it in False Contact, and he shoots that guy, you know, Crewman Lynch. This was Crewman Lynch, and he shoots him with a holographic bullet.
Yeah. So the interesting thing about this version of Hugh is we assume that, number one, he's not working for Starfleet. Mm-hmm. This is an outside joint operation because Starfleet would probably let an ex-Borg come along.
Right.
Second thing is, I don't believe they call him Hugh. I don't think they refer to him by name. I believe they call him like administrator or something or other, but I don't think they actually call him Hugh. So if the Hugh name was given to him, obviously, by the Next Generation crew, then somewhere out there he's got his actual original personality and name, like just like Seven and Nine did.
Yeah.
So I don't think that was mentioned. And I think that might have not been mentioned purely for that reason, because you go, Who's Fred Bloggs? Oh, okay, it's Hugh. Right, okay, that makes sense. So that might be why they didn't call him by name and just got people to recognize him.
I just like going back to this idea of the importance of Geordi. Like, his presence is his absence in this whole plot thread rings hollow to me.
Geordi,
you know he's alive because Zaban mentions him in the second episode. But now we're dealing with Geordi's best friend and the person who Geordi helped rediscover his humanity.
That's true, yeah.
Like, these are two very important. Like, Geordi's only got like three plot points. He's got Data, he's got Hugh, and he has the fact that he can't get laid, and he has an infatuation with holographic women. Like, he's got three plot points, and these are the two best ones, and we're ignoring them.
Well, we have no indication that I forgot the actor's name.
LeVar Burton.
That LeVar Burton is returning.
Otherwise known as the man who taught me how to read. Jason is 20 years older. he didn't grow up with a reading rainbow.
I did not. My first introduction to LeVar Burton was Roots.
Yeah, Roots.
Mm-hmm. When I was a kid and that show was on. I was a little kid and it was a miniseries. But really it was Star Trek. I didn't recognize him.
And there's so many Star Trek alumni in the various Roots miniseries.
Really?
Like, Avery Brooks is in one, Kate Mulgrew's in, like, there's a ton of Star Trek talent. But
we have no indication that Geordi is returning to the show. We have not heard, right?
No, we haven't heard. I think it's kind of a lost opportunity.
Interesting.
Because it can be like this show gives, like, because we all love Picard. Like, Picard's got some great episodes. I can pop in one of any 25 random episodes that are Picard-centric and be like, it's a good time. Geordi's got like three episodes and two of them are awful.
Okay.
Like this show has the opportunity to rehabilitate characters that the original show may have neglected.
Yeah, interesting. All right, so we get an attack on Chateau Picard. Cool action scene with a bunch of Romulan assassins. We find out that the two housekeepers are not just housekeepers. I mean, we always knew that, but they sort of prove their fighting spirit in this one. Mm-hmm.
And I love the retcon that the Romulans with the bumpy heads all just normals.
That's what I was going to say. Yes.
Subtle piece of world building. I'm like, thank you for explaining this to me that I didn't necessarily need to explain, but I appreciate you doing this.
Yeah. No, it's clever because it gets me into thinking about stuff. That's the thing. And the idea you can have, I mean, even like in the scenes on the Borg, you start on the Borg cube, they've got like the haircut used to be the Romulan thing. Mm-hmm. And every so often you see one with like the kind of the really heavy fringe with like cut to points. So thinking somebody's thought about it and said, okay, these guys with the ridges are this thing. Rather than just going, oh well, don't worry about it. We won't mention it and nobody will care. Like they kind of did with the Discovery Klingons.
Right, right.
Somebody's thought about this.
The Discovery Klingons are a separate topic, and we could probably fight about it all day. But
I got my bat left. We can go.
They look a lot more like Klingons to me in the second season when they start growing hair.
Oh, yes.
Right.
All right. So you brought in the Michael Chabon, like Rosetta Stone last time.
Yes. Okay.
And I'm just going to bring in the small little, like Rosetta Crumb. Chabon wrote an article for the New Yorker recently detailing his experience with his dying father called The Final Frontier. Yeah, while he's writing the episode Q&A, which is the short track where Spock and Number One are in the elevator.
Okay.
He's having a mental conversation with himself using his dad's voice because he's sitting there right next to his dad.
Wow. Okay.
And the one thing he talks about is how a Mop Time sort of stitches up this piece of the Star Trek fandom that no one was quite asking for, but is desperately needed.
Which is?
Which was sort of the explanation of how can Vulcans be logical and all emotionless and yet still have these passions and still have like still be able to have love and all these other expressions. And I think like that's how he approaches a Q&A is like the little piece of the quilt that he was stitching up is why was Spock smiling in the cage? Like, why did that happen? So the very first thing we see is creepy Spock smiling before he gets beamed onto the Enterprise.
Right.
Which when I watched it the first time, we had to rewind. I'm like, why is this so creepy? And then it's like, no, he's just smiling, and that's weird from a Vulcan. So I think with the Northerner idea, like creating a reason for why you have these two breeds of Romulans, without it being some three-part prequel episode that involves Khan, it's just, no, we have a sub-race, and they will just prominent in the political structure of Next Generation.
Well, we want to be careful of calling it a sub-race, right? Because it's a straight-up racial metaphor.
That's true.
Right? The people with smooth foreheads and the people with bumpy foreheads. It's like, are you black on the left and black, white on the right? Or black on the right and white on the left?
I think I use sub-race just because it's D&D terminology.
It's from D&D, yeah.
But we also do have racial distinctions. We now got some black Romulans in there, unless I'm very mistaken, which makes sense because we've had black Vulcans in the past. So if they're an offshoot of that race, that would make sense. So that's the first, because like when Mark Leonard played the Romulans in the past, they kind of had that kind of slightly yellowy kind of goldy makeup on them to kind of make them look a bit different.
Yeah.
And all Romulans kind of followed that thing. Every time you saw a Romulan, I mean, like Selar and stuff like that, she kind of slightly more olive complexion skin. Now we've got like, oh no, we've got a full gamut of people, you just didn't see him before. And I think that's really cool as well, because it's kind of about time. If you've got a black Vulcan, then you've got to have black Romulans, otherwise it makes no sense.
Do we have any odds at all on Selar coming back for this show?
Oh, that'd be brilliant. She was a cool character, yeah.
I don't want that.
Really? Yeah.
I know that some people really hate that character.
It's not that I hate the character. I don't hate the character. I just think if you're going to do Sela in the 24th century, you have to explain that the one motivating factor of Tasha Yar's character was that she was rescued from a rape planet. That is mentioned so many times in whole
True.
21 episodes, and Sela is now a product of rape. Like, whole legacy is been tied into whole trauma. And if you want to have that can't be a guest star. That has to be an episode. That has to actually, like, really dig down to deal with the traumas that we metaphorically deal with Patrick Stewart being assimilated as a rape metaphor. Like, we deal with that in False Contact a little bit, right?
Yeah.
But now you're dealing with the actual thing, and we actually have to sit down and have the conversation. And I don't think they're ready for that conversation.
That might be a bit too much to handle for this season.
Yeah.
There's
so much stuff going on. Like, I think Sela's just too big. Because then you also have to explain time paradoxes.
Yeah.
Guinan knows. Like, if you're bringing in Guinan season two, maybe you can make this work.
That's right. We do have Guinan coming. We know that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think the idea that they've obviously got this plot going on here. I think the idea you are, if you were to throw, hey, every single guest star we can get into them, people are just going to go, oh, okay, which one's in this episode?
Who's my old friend coming back today?
Yeah.
All right. So, speaking of that, it occurred to me as I was watching, we have seen images of Riker and Troy talking to Picard.
Yeah, and annoyingly enough, in the review of this episode that I saw on YouTube, that was the picture of Riker. And I thought, oh, when's he showing up? And he didn't show up at all.
He didn't show up?
Yeah.
But they talked to him at the chateau. And we just left the chateau.
No. If you look at the – okay, so those two things. It can be Beta Zed because Beta Zed's positioned as idyllic, and there was bodies of water they were on. And when we've gone to Beta Zed, we've always seen like lakes and ripples and whatnot.
Yeah. I presume there was a flash. I thought it was going to be in the flashback sequence.
Or it could be part of Alaska. Like, he comes back to Earth and he has a plan. Like, whatever his plan of uprooting Starfleet, like, he then goes to Riker and goes, "This is what I'm thinking of doing." And Riker's like, "Well, I'm not going to talk you out of it."
Yeah, because this place the ship's going to, we don't even know where it is. Obviously, they're not heading straight to the Borg cube.
Yeah, so they're going in search of Maddox.
Yeah, right? And Raffi wants to go there anyway, seemingly for her own purposes, so whether or not that's whatever, and whether or not, like, he says, okay, go, don't worry about it, go back to Earth, we don't know. But yeah, it's, I don't know if it's literally going to be now we're in space, we're staying in space, or we're going to go back and forth.
And we've clarified that Raffi apparently has some kind of addiction problem.
Yeah.
Which results in some kind of anxiety or mental instability. Is that right?
Yeah, she said snake leaf-induced paranoia is the phrase.
Okay.
And we can only assume the snake leaf was the plant
that
she was smoking when she was vaping.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, it's interesting.
So now, in you guys aren't watching The Ready Room, are you?
I am not.
So I try to catch The Ready Room like the next day or so. So yeah. In that episode where we interviews Michelle Hall, the actress who plays Raffi, and she explains that, like, both her parents sort of abandoned her to follow their careers, so she sort of gets left behind, which is where she develops the addiction issues, and, like, Jean-Luc is the man who inspires her and pulls her out of the bottle.
Okay.
But when Jean-Luc doesn't get up and say, hey, you know, I'm sorry that this happened and that rift happens in the flashback, that adds to the fact that not only is she disappointed in whole sort of superior officer, she's disappointed in whole surrogate father figure.
Right, okay. So then we've got a new crew. We've got Rios and his ship. And apparently he is a former first officer on a Starfleet ship whose captain died in trauma.
I'm sorry, Missy's in the background dancing because I think she likes Rios.
He is one of the numerous sexy male characters on this show.
Yes.
And there are no shortage of them. They have to, you know, they're already appealing to the age 80 audience. They have to get the younger audience too, right? So Rios has a crew of emergency holograms who I believe are all played by the same actor but with different accents.
Yeah, they're all him.
Yeah.
Oh, like, it's pretty on the nose with the symbolism here.
Go ahead. Unpack it for me.
He can only trust himself. And he's my theory is that he has a wealth of self-loathing, and that's why he belittles himself. Like he's just doing it externally with the holograms.
I picked
he's always dismissive of them.
I picked up that he was kind of masochistic because he refuses to get medical treatment. Like he doesn't want a pain reliever. He doesn't want to get sewed up. And I figured that was him sort of punishing himself.
Well, that and he's smoking he's smoking a cigar. Like,
yeah,
that's that. Like, the 24th century has like two or three examples of like even the Ferengi in the episode where they go back and they're the little green men and they're the aliens that crash at Roswell.
Okay.
Even though, like, why are you killing yourselves with cigarettes? Like, they actually make a point of that. Like, why is this happening? What are you doing?
So
like, and even if the Ferengi can say, hey, what's this weird behavior you're doing? Like, sort of the more universe of Star Trek is rebuking that. And now we have a character who is not only flaunting it, but he's like doing it sexily with like a ninja star sticking out of his body.
And then we have Raffi who's vaping, as you pointed out. So like Star Trek is very anti-smoking.
You guys ever watched The Orville?
No, I don't know.
Okay, there was an episode in The Orville where their Klingon analogy picks up smoking, and it's super addictive for his race. But he's just sitting there with like packs of cigarettes every day, and the commanding officer, played by Seth MacFarlane, he goes, "Yeah, we're all going to sick bay right now. Just everyone to sick bay," and he owes everyone to sick bay for the secondhand smoke effects.
Right. Right, so
obviously not that.
It actually took me a couple of seconds to even recognize it was the same person as the EMH as himself.
Yeah, I didn't.
It's like, are they the same guy? And then the other one comes up with a different accent. I think, no, he didn't sound like that originally, did he? There's something going on there. So that kind of now makes sense to distinguish between each one. But I'm assuming we've got now the EMHs are now fulfilling different job purposes rather than just purely medical. They're obviously being programmed to be different stuff. So that's cool. And obviously the hollow emitters have obviously got to be placed around the entire ship rather than just the sick bay.
Right.
So that they can do that. And because we're assuming they haven't got a solid light thing like the Doctor had in Voyager. So we're still talking hollow emitters. Yeah. So,
and the ban on artificial life does not apply to holographic.
Yes.
People. Oh, that's interesting.
So that's the biggest deviation. Like you can't have a physical body, but you can be a light hologram.
But again, as soon as he appeared and started doing his thing as the Doctor, I immediately thought, "Hey, it's the Data Doctor character that everyone loves because it's instantly kind of really quite likable straight away." So yeah, it's pretty cool.
So with the multiple personalities, you think that those are like basically fragments of his own psyche? Like he's got his id and his ego and his super ego personified as different emergency holograms.
My supposition is that he's taken base programming and he's just slapped his face on it. If the writer is doing that, that's a different thing. But in terms of like the in-universe explanation for why they have different accents, if you watch it with the subtitles, it says in British accent, in Irish accent, in Spanish accent, on all the dialogue.
Well, and we had the Romulan with an Irish accent. This show is showing a strange obsession with the accents of the British Isles.
As well as should.
I don't mind. Honestly, like, give me an Irish Romulan any day of the week. Like, Laris may be my favorite character on the show.
She's really good. Yeah, yeah.
So we have our crew. We have Raffi and Rios and the Doctor.
Just as an interesting side line about the Doctor arriving in the ship, she arrives to come and shoot the Red Romulan strike team. I'm really suspect of her showing up at exactly that point in time and not being a plant.
Okay.
I think the answer that I always kind of said, well, you just go along and do your thing and then just show up and off you pop and that'll be fine. Even though she said she didn't tell him that he was going, that seemed really suspect. And, you've got to take me with you. It's like, okay. So we shall see. But
the actress does a really good job of playing the innocent overwhelmed by events, though.
Yeah.
So this is what I think.
Okay. What is
I kind of like the actress. I kind of like the fact that we like Misty has commented. She's like the doe-eye wonderkind of the show.
Yes.
This is my thought. Is Commodore O? We didn't see the conversation. I don't think they had a conversation. I think they had a mind meld. Commodore O has planted something in Agnes that will become active at some point in the plot.
Okay, so Agnes thinks that she's innocent.
Yes.
But she
has no idea. But secretly, this creepy Vulcan has implanted something in her. She's like a sleeper agent.
That would fit with AIDS observation that her arrival is very suspicious.
Mm-hmm. Because I still think I still think Commander O sent that the Romulan strike force at that moment in time.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So I don't want the only person who feels like Agnes feels like a character you can put in any Star Trek show and she would fit.
Yeah.
With very little rewriting.
Yeah, she's like the whale scientist in Star Trek 3.
Yeah. Like she feels like she can fit in any sort of like motley crew that you want to throw on. Like she could be a Voyager character, she could be a DS9 character. So I don't want her to be the bad guy.
Right.
But creepy Vulcan is creepy.
So I had one observation that I wanted to ask your both of you about, and it's about the opening credits. So when I first watched the opening credits the first time, it was just kind of cool music and, you know, weird imagery. But as we've come to learn that the plot is about the biological recreation of constructed organisms, the opening credits have begun to take on more meaning because it appears to show cellular division and regeneration, and we see cybernetic faces, but then it ends up regenerating Picard instead. And it looks to me like the show is maybe sliding towards Jim's prediction of Data getting a new body by the end, and that maybe the opening credits are actually foreshadowing that whole process.
I hope so. I'm still pulling for that theory. My theory from last episode, I think, has taken I have a new sort of Narek theory, but we can get to that in a second.
We're talking about opening credits. Narek is the captain of the Romulan ship
Narek's like the advisor or the shady boyfriend, you know, the codependent boyfriend who's like, I need to manipulate you by telling you I love you.
I'm sorry, maybe I have this guy confused. Who is this again?
Narek is the boyfriend, the Romulan.
Okay, yeah. To me, I think of him as like the Spock because, like, he looks so much like the actor that they have cast as young Spock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is CBS's version of apparently what young hotness looks like, right? Like, we want you to be have really thick dark hair. Yeah, exactly. The shaggy dark beard that's kind of just a lot of unshaven and not even really a beard.
Yep.
And pointy ears. And
don't have those yet.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, okay, so Narek. Tell us your theory.
So my theory, just going off of sort of like the fact that he does comment, you know, it's good to see you back the way you're supposed to look to a sister.
Yes.
I think that just sort of like torpedoes the idea that she's a transsexual character.
Okay.
Yes, I like that.
I think the brother thing is going to be a plot point, but I think he's the brother of the new Romulan we're going to meet next episode. Elnor, the Legolas character I'm super excited for.
Yeah.
I think maybe he was, like, they were brothers and they got separated in the evacuation, and Picard winds up becoming a surrogate father to this character, and now Picard's in this weird father, you know, brother versus brother dynamic.
Interesting.
Just going off of the clip and the few lines of dialogue Narek's given to us to assist on, I feel that we can read that those are actual, you know, character lines and not just some constructed, you know, Tal Shiar narrative within a narrative fiction.
So the interesting thing about the sister coming back is that she's gone full Romulan again.
She doesn't
show up as a human. It's like, okay, this is interesting. So, is it that easy to switch species now to do, you know, like they took ages to do or what? We don't know, but it's like
it in a commercial break.
Yeah, exactly, which is interesting because, you know, I know we've had the episode in the Next Generation where we had Deanna Troi and a couple others dress up as proto-Vulcans by popping on some ears and just, you know, effectively going down to a planet, but the other way around is more difficult, I would say, just to add ears on, but
There was, okay, so I want to try to unpack a little bit that scene in which Soji meets the Romulan folklorist who has been unplugged from the Borg and is playing with like the Romulan tarot cards. All right, so from what I understand from the narrative, from the exposition, there was a Romulan ship, and this Borg cube assimilated the Romulans on that ship. And as soon as that happened, the Borg cube was cut off from the collective. And that's this cube that they're all in.
And that's what they're leaning towards? But we have seen a Romulan Borg in Voyager.
Yeah, I'm not saying that there are other Romulans, but yeah. Not like this one. So then,
I would say the reason for it is because they discovered something, obviously, in the Romulans that would maybe infect the collective, and they were worried about that, and that's why they disconnected it from the collective.
Yeah, I think it was some kind of booby trap, like some kind of Romulan booby trap placed in Romulans, so that if they get assimilated by the Borg, it would be a weapon. Right.
It could mean, because she says about, like, where she's using, like, the cards, and she's basically saying, okay, this is something that's been predetermined for X amount of years. You're the destroyer and this kind of stuff. This obviously seems to be some kind of Romulan folklore thing or a history thing that goes back thousands of years. Now, whether or not that's because we are using some kind of portent thing and it's actually, or it's something they've experienced once before and they know it's coming back at some point, that's difficult to tell at the moment. But say, it could just be that the Borg kind of realized this woman knew about this potential thing, and they said, "Okay, we don't want to be seen to be that. That could endanger our thing. If they start thinking, oh, we're something we're not, or whatever, that might be just a reason why they cut it off. Or it could it could be something like you say, where it's kind of like an implant, and they use it as an anti-Borg device. But it could just, I don't know. It's difficult to tell again.
We also have this this fact that she knows about the two sisters.
Yeah.
When she's asked, when Soji asks her, how do you want to describe legend or mythology? And her answer is news, meaning that the mythology actually happened. That's how I interpreted that.
Yeah.
That what you call mythology, we call fact, right? And
see, I would counter that slightly.
Yeah, good.
Because it's not just that it actually happening, but that it is currently happening. News is the false, like okay. As news person, you know that, like, news is the false recording of history, but okay. It's actively happening.
Okay.
Like, whatever these giant forces are, that's part of this monomyth framework, the shield mythological framework that she's talking about, they're currently happening.
How does this woman know that Daj dies?
She says, which one are you? Are you the living one or the dead one?
Yeah. Are you the living one or the dead one? How does she know that if she hasn't been in the future?
Yeah, say it's either got linked back to some kind of Romulan prophecy, effectively, where they say, okay, there's going to be two androids created. One's going to die, one's going to live, but they don't know when it's going to happen. So when they meet her face on, they say, well, are you going to be the one that's going to die? And the living one's still out there somewhere, or is the dead one already died, and you're the living one? And they seem to be more afraid of her being the living one than anybody else.
But my desire I always thought of Star Trek as a non-mystical place. Like, there are no prophecies in Star Trek, but of course there are.
The Bajorans, yeah.
The Bajorans is a big example. So when I think of a Romulan prophecy, my mind immediately presumes that there's actually some sort of funky time travel going on here. And that somebody actually physically went to the future or saw the future and knows what happened. But maybe it is. Do we think that it is a prophecy? Like, is there a mystic tradition amongst the Romulans and they can actually tell the future with, like, the Force or something?
Well, maybe what this secret organization is, maybe it's more to do with a kind of a mystical kind of foretelling of something that's going to happen. That's why it's kind of kept secret. So it's like a secret society, like that respect. Well, the other guys, you deal with all the military stuff. We will deal with all the mystical stuff. But I mean, even the Bajorans had the Orb of Time. So that was kind of a thing. And if you had an Orb of Time that could literally allow you to see through into time stuff, then it's kind of not really, even really a prophecy. It's literally just popping through a window and saying, that's going to happen.
So it's not prophecy. It's an artifact that lets you see it. Yeah. Okay.
And also with the Bajorans, all their information comes from the prophets, and the prophets are non-lineal alien beings.
Right.
They experience all moments as one moment.
They're all Dr. Manhattan.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's not even for them, it's just like I always kind of thought that the prophets will just they would randomly remember something or experience something or think of something that was going to happen, and then they give them as the thing, you know, here's this nugget of information, and it just happens to be removed from the framework of the Bajoran people.
So I don't believe that this Romulan woman is actually using some kind of prophecy cards to divine the future. Like, there's got to be a scientific explanation for it.
Mm. But the other interesting thing
is, Discovery gave us time crystals.
True.
Like, they're not about doing that.
Tell me about time crystals, because I have forgotten this.
Okay, time crystals is the thing that they keep in Boath, which is the same place where they went to all the trouble to clone Kalas.
Mm-hmm.
When they could have just plucked him out of time, I guess. But they went to all the trouble to clone Kalas from a piece of blood. And apparently underneath the temple, there was a whole bunch of crystals that they can use to tell time. And Captain Pike goes there. Now, I like it narratively for Pike's story in terms of, like, Pike makes a decision that he cannot reverse the fate that he's going to be in the wheelchair. Like, from a character perspective, I think that's really strong. From a world building's perspective, it's sort of counterintuitive to what Star Trek is in terms of now those these mystical rocks. We're four steps away from an Infinity Gauntlet, is my thinking.
Yeah, because the original thing was kind of like, okay, you pick the crystal up. If you accept what the crystal is going to tell you, that's what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, okay, well, to get the image, I need to know. And then he uses the crystal, and then therefore he's locked into that fate from that point onwards. He's going to die. Well, he's going to be burnt in the fire stuff and end up in the wheelchair or the BP chair, as it is. So, yeah, it's not unheard of to have been used before. In the past, so
and Star Trek science is malleable, right? Like,
yes,
like the core concept of Star Trek is we can go faster than life, and that allows us to unify disparate peoples in working together to solve problems, right? Like, faster than light travels is a pipe dream. We can't do it now. Maybe someday we'll crack the code, but right now that's just fantasy itself.
Sure.
Mycelium network, where you pop out anywhere you want, is straight up fantasy.
Sure. See. The interesting part about the scene we're talking about as well is actually probably the scene immediately afterwards, because the scene immediately afterwards where Darge is what's her name?
Soji.
Yeah, she's saying to the guy, "I didn't know all this information until I was there," and then all of a sudden I started spewing this information out about the Romulan ship and all this kind of stuff. So is she actively an agent against the Romulans? Because that would seem to suggest that there's a plot in her head that seems to be counterproductive.
We skipped over the scene where she gets reprogrammed, right? After her encounter with the Romulan, yes. She goes back to her room and she calls her mom. Now, here's the real quiz. Is the image of her mom on her phone the same as the image of the mom on Daj's phone in the first episode?
I believe so.
Is it the same mom?
I think it is, but there was a random foot in the background of the shot that makes it indecipherable to tell.
So then the mom says, "Oh, of course, Daj is fine. She's buying a puppy." And then Soji's eyes sort of roll up into her head and she falls over.
So I think we can safely say that mom is a construct.
Yes.
And it's some sort of holographic program that they dial into whenever it is that they need something in the real world, because they've been only active for, what, 3 years?
But somebody has hacked the mom AI.
Well, this is the thing, because when Darge speaks to her a moment, you see, like, the glitch, and you don't know if the glitch is there because she's been asked information that thing has not been programmed to access.
But that's the AI that tells her to find Picard.
Yes. So that's true. You're right. Yes, that is true.
Soji's mom has been hijacked by the Romulans in some way.
Soji's mom is probably the actual mom. But Daj's mom was hijacked, was hacked. Somebody who was trying to get Daj to Picard.
Yeah, that's I
think you have it in the reverse.
Yeah, it might be the opposite way around. That it was a real person on the end of Daj's phone, but it's a construct on the other one.
We saw the glitch on Daj's mom.
That's true. This is the thing. It's very confusing because, again, we don't know if there's a plot.
The glitch is telling you that something is wrong with the system. So that's the hack. That's the hacker's fingerprint. Is the glitch.
And we don't even know if the person in that. The mom in that image is actually a real person. If it's purely there just as like a coping mechanism for the android to say, okay, what do I do? Okay, well, if you're in trouble, call this and they'll reassure you.
Yeah,
or if it's actually an active way of reprogramming people or reprogram these two things by the people that have got this plot going on against the Romulans, and that's the way they're manipulating them.
So basically, what we're saying is you can't trust Ma.
Yes,
right? I think Ma is untrustworthy. But holograms controlled by Romulans, and we just don't know.
We still don't. There's another force out there somewhere. There's the Romulans. But there's somebody else out there, because we still don't know who sent Dodge to Picard.
No,
I think that's Maddox.
That's what I would say.
My thinking is that Maddox programmed a failsafe that if you are in trouble, this is the one man in the universe you can trust.
Maddox hacked the Mom AI.
Yeah.
Well, Maddox created the Mom AI.
And then it kind of kicks into emergency situation and goes to say, go find Picard if you have a problem.
We will find out.
Yeah. As soon as we find out Maddox, if he's coming back to the show, I know the actor's still alive, but they haven't announced that he's going to be in there.
Maddox appears in one episode or two, and he's referred to in Data's Day.
He appears in one episode. He is referred to in Data's Day, and that's it.
Yeah, and that's why I find it so fascinating, because they're hinting all of this stuff on a one episode character. It's amazing the amount of name checks he gets.
Yes, that's true, but it's one of those episodes that everyone watches. Like,
true.
Measure of a Man is one of those episodes. Like, everyone has seen the Best of Both Worlds, Pumps 1 and 2. They've all seen maybe The Inner Light, possibly, but they've all seen Measure of a Man, because it's one of those episodes that everyone says it's one of the best. Watch it. It's like the Dalmock episode. Like, it's one of the best. For those watch it.
Measure of the Man is the episode in which Data's humanity is literally put on trial.
Yeah. So this is interesting. So like we were talking about LeVar Burton coming out for George LaForge. Now, technically speaking, if they said George LaForge went off and did something to try and resurrect Data, George LaForge would be a perfect stand-in for Maddox at this point in time.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Now, whether or not that was because LeVar Burton didn't want to come back, so they said, okay, we'll have Maddox, or whether or not the idea that Maddox is going to be an absolute arsehole at some point, we don't want to put that on George LaForge, that's a possibility. But they are almost, technically speaking, because we only see Maddox in that one episode, they could have switched them out, and it would have kind of gone, ah, Geordi, now that makes sense. Geordi's trying to save Data. Now it's kind of Bruce Maddox. Well, is he a good guy now? Is he a bad guy now? Maybe that's the reason. You don't know if it's an actor coming back to the show thing, or a story-driven, I'm going to be a git thing. So
now, in Data's Day, Data sends this long message back to Maddox, right?
Yeah, he's basically recording a captain's log, a lieutenant commander's log, and he's writing letters to Maddox to be like, this is my day-to-day life. This is how I'm interacting with people.
Yeah.
Like, you will see me marry O'Brien to Keiko O'Brien.
Right.
Not my favorite character on the show or any of the shows that she's on. That's the whole point of the episode. But Romulans show up in that episode, because that's also the episode where the Vulcan ambassador is under disguise and Bacall delivers her to the Romulans. You guys remember that plot point?
No.
Like, it's the only plot in Data's Day. Like, otherwise, it's just Data trying to get O'Brien married to Keiko. Like, that's the whole central conflict. But meanwhile, they're transporting this Vulcan ambassador, and the Vulcan gets beamed away onto the Romulan ship and is revealed, "War Romulans, and we have been spying on you." And Bacall doesn't try to retrieve him because it would jeopardize the Enterprise. And that is later used against him in the Drumhead trial when they put Bacall on trial to be like, why ain't you stop the Romulan ambassador who was spying on us?
So
that's the point when Worf steps up and goes, no, he would have destroyed the Enterprise. Like, we all would have been dead.
So the Vulcan ambassador is not actually Vulcan in that episode.
Another good reason for not having this conspiracy go back so far. Because the idea that we've got, like, the episode The Defector, where it's like, okay, if Starfleet were involved in the Romulan plot, then the Romulans just go, well, don't send the Enterprise, send some other ship, and then we'll just bring the Defector straight back again, and it wouldn't be a problem. So I can't honestly believe it goes that far back. It would be crazy.
But Vulcans are also involved in the plot, and the Vulcans are the second important species in Star Trek, I can buy that. Like, that easily explains Federation complicity, because the one people we have been told to trust since, you know, the cage, the one person we've been told to trust is Spock.
Yeah.
And if those people are involved in this weird conspiracy that dates back millennia beyond the split, beyond the 2100-year split, then maybe.
Do you think people are going to react well to the Vulcans being bad guys, though, if that seems to be the thing? That's, I think it's going to be like, what?
Vulcans were kind of the bad guys in Enterprise, though, too.
That's true. Yeah, they were just arrogant, weren't they, in Enterprise? More than anything else, but yeah.
All right, gang. Well, that is our show for today.
Yep, that was a 60-minute mark.
We will be back, though, next week. We have a new character that's arriving, a character who apparently reads The Three Musketeers, and Dumas is one of Jim's favorite novelists, so... Yeah. That character is I decided they somehow wrote Jim's me character into the show. I don't know how they did that, but
I'm pretty excited.
But it makes total sense for Picard, who, quite frankly, he's not an action star, and he's going to need some physical manpower to protect himself. So it makes total sense that he would recruit a Romulan to kick ass.
But that's also why I'm actually disappointed the housekeepers didn't go.
Yeah.
Because I would really like them to go. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks everyone for listening to the show, and we'll be back next week. Take care. Goodbye.
Cheers.
Have a good one.